हरि ओ
Page 41. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on the importance of tapasya for attaining the goal of human life. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the Brahmanas and their renounced order of life. According to Bhagavat philosophy, every human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business. Because by penance only one can realize his self. And self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. So that's the whole point, is why is one maintaining oneself? Why is one having an occupation? Why is one developing? It's so that one has the facility for tapasya. Right? You have a place where now you can, you know, properly chant, do your kirtan, do your services, do all these things like that. That's the idea. Not for sense gratification, because that will be lost. Right? The tapasya never goes away. Right? And if you apply that, then it means, because we're always looking at, okay, when you put money away, when is it for? Later. And, you know, and so when does later come?
Very soon.
Sooner than you think.
Sooner than you plan.
Yeah. So basically, you know, I mean, in theory, it's supposed to be towards the end of life, right? But then, if sense gratification there, then all the facilities, basically means you might have money in that, but the ability to use it goes away. Well, if you perform tapa, then you don't maybe enjoy it so much now, but then the same amount of enjoyment you have later. Does that make sense? Right? You know, let's say, I'm only getting 50% of the enjoyment I could get out of life because of tapasya, right? Instead of 100%. But then the problem is if you get 100% now, when you're older, then you get zero. Right? There's no such thing as 100% all the way through, unless, of course, you die young or something, you know. Then of course, you can do whatever you want.
Some may say, well, we are so worried for the future because it's more of fashion. We should live now. We worry about now. Who knows what will happen tomorrow? We save money. We don't enjoy, and then tomorrow you die, and that's it.
Yeah, I kind of think the grasshopper had that philosophy. The cricket, right? And he kind of had to go to the ants, who were thinking about the future. Yeah. It means you have some truth in that. On one level, is that because it's what you do now that's important. You have to focus on now, not focusing on the future. But the point is, the sense of the material world has a nature to not go well. Therefore, there's always the recommendation: if you're generating money, you put some away, emergency. So it's ideal is 1/4. Because if you whatever money you have, if you take a quarter off, you don't miss it that much. You know, there's always those few extra things you could buy, but as far as things running well, the 75% does fine. But if you put away 25, it doesn't seem like much, but after years, it's a lot. Right? So just as there for in case something happens, and if not, then we can always give it away in charity. You know, so it's there's no loss. Right? But the point is that when one's older, one still is active and able to be engaged in activities. So therefore, it's 50% now. But when you're old, it's still 50%. The engagement of the senses. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, you know, but that 50% is about as much as good as it gets. So it's like full then, you know. So it's a matter of whether you have full now and nothing later, or less now and full later. So the tapasya, that's what life's meant for. So all these other things are meant to support. That's the idea. So the house, these other things, money, organization, management, you know, social position, is only meant so that tapasya goes on nicely. That's the viewpoint. Right? So when one gets worried about making facilities, making money, security, the point is that's only of use if it's a connection with tapasya. If it's not a connection with tapasya, it's not actually that useful. Because whatever you gain in the positive now will become negative later. Well, if you keep it at neutral now, it'll be neutral later. Does that make sense? Because neutral is better than negative. Does that make sense? Right? Having no money is better than owing money. You understand? So that's the... Yes.
Is tapasya always unpleasant?
No, it's just a matter of practice. It's just like this. Is climbing, you know, the north face of, you know, K2 pleasant or unpleasant?
Depends on the person.
That's the whole point. So tapasya can be pleasant. That's what it says. It's the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas, because they like it simple. They like it like that.
So for them, it's not unpleasant.
It's not. Just like for them and for children, it's not unpleasant. Hmm. If you train them like that, for children, it's simple anyway, right? You know, how much stuff does the kid have in the womb? Not a whole lot, you know. 9 months of sitting in water, right? You know, so it's like it's a matter of how you train them. They're comfortable with simple. That's what Prabhupada is saying. If they grew up in simple, then for them simple is nice. It is just like, let us say, what are, you could, let's see if it'll work. As far as, let's say, something to eat, many times for adults, especially if they've grown up in some more kind of, you know, how you say, ethnic or, you know, exposed to the nature of simpler things when they're very young. So when it comes to eating things, what is it that are sometimes the favorite things to eat?
My simple stuff.
Yeah, it means, in other words, what you ate as a kid.
Yeah.
But if it's something that someone else comes in contact as an adult, they don't find it that interesting. You know, like around here you have this wild plant, wild little tree, that it's called a kool. And it grows these funny little fruits on them. And if you've eaten them since you're small, it doesn't matter who they are, how big they are, as soon as they see a kool tree, they get excited. But if you didn't eat them when you're young, they're not interesting at all. They're just not interesting. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's what you grow up when you're young, and you like it when you're young, then you grow up. It's nice. Like kids, what do they like to eat when they're small? They like rice and dal, you know, and that's about it. So that's the whole thing, is being simple is easy for them. So that's the whole point of the Vedic education. So if someone grows up like that, then when they grow up, then it will work very nicely. Then as an adult, it's easy. The problem is, if we think that being complicated is what's going to make us happy, then, and that's what you do is when you're young, then when you grow up, you know, how complicated can you make it? You know. So, makes sense. Yeah.
We see in the Bhagavatam, different personalities, they perform different kind of tapas.
Yes.
But it was tapas anyway, but then they got different kind of results. say like Dhruva Maharaj and Ravana or Hiranyakashipu, they did a lot of penance.
Yes.
And then one achieved something and then the other achieved something else.
Well, you can see as both of them got, all of them got darshan of the Lord.
Yes.
It's just a matter of what was the outcome of that darshan.
So this means the tapas always brings good results.
Always brings good results. It's just a matter of what you do with it. Just like if you follow favorable business practices, you'll always get money. Right? But now, depending on your mentality and why you're doing it, then that's how you're going to use it. So then you can get problems from there. So the demons, they use tapasya to get material facility, which they'll misuse for power and sense gratification and all that. But the devotees use the same tapasya, get that facility and use it for Krishna. So the point is they're going through, they're controlling their senses so that they can not control their senses. But the devotees are controlling their senses to be able to use what's gained from that control of senses to please Krishna, which means further controlling of the senses. So for the devotees, there's that stability. That's what we're talking about. There's that stability. Then that stability is all throughout life. That gives more satisfaction, because that's the mode of goodness. That stability, right? So then one is controlling the senses for a higher purpose, and when one gets, you know, when there's no results, and when one gets results, one's still controlling the senses and engaging in Krishna service. Right? So that's the whole point, is that why these things are important is not because, you know, how you say, being austere is not the point. Because in Braj, how austere is Braj? Not very austere. Right? So it's not about austerity, it's about that voluntary giving up of the principle that I'm the center and making someone else the center. Does that make sense? So sacrifice, you're focusing on the performance of activity where you're not looking at the result for yourself. Charity means however you got it, but you're giving away the result. You know what I'm saying? The focus is on the result. Sacrifice is on the is focusing on the activity. Penance is more your situation, right? Austerity is how you're situated. One's situated as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and yes, you're following those duties. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing, as that the whole idea is that the identity, the work, and the benefit is for someone else. Like, I'm servant of Krishna. What's the identity for? It's for Krishna, not for us. Sacrifice, I do the activity so that Krishna will get the benefit. Right? So it's not for us. Charity is that what you have, you give it. Do you understand? So the whole idea is that that's what's important about it, is because the soul's nature is servant of Krishna. And the results are about prema, for love for Krishna. Does that make sense? So, since that does, we don't relate to that, you can't come up to a smarta or a maya body and start talking about, what do you call it? Prema, the benefit of surrendering everything to God and identifying as servant of God. But they will relate to austerity, penance, sacrifice, charity, these things. So, it's that's why piety is recommended, because the situation is good. In other words, you have the right attitude when it comes to dealing with the external. But you don't have the right attitude and why you're dealing that way with the external. But in other words, I'm austere, I perform sacrifice and charity for my benefit. So in other words, the situation is good, but how you're going to use it is a problem. Right? But then for the devotee, it's the same situation, because it's useful, but it's done to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why the human life is meant for austerity. So austerity means the proper performance of your duties, because when you perform it, you were asking about, is it always a problem? No. Generally, if you're performing your duties, then 50% is nice, 50% is not. Just like, is cooking in the winter a problem? No. It's the right place to be, right? Yeah, exactly. You know, everyone hangs out in the kitchen, right? You know, but in the summer,
it is a problem.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. That's the thing. Or taking a cool shower in the summer, is that a problem?
No.
Right, you know, it's 43 degrees out, and you have to take a cool shower, is that the, you know, like that. But if it's winter time, then that's a problem. See, that's the whole thing. It's always 50-50. When things are done right, it's 50-50, because then it's balanced. We have this idea it'll be 100%, you know, 100%, you know. It doesn't exactly work like that. So that's always, that's the idea. So that's the point, is that the Brahmins is the performance of their prescribed duties, because what's a Brahmin's prescribed duties do? Tapasya. Well, I mean, just saying that everybody's is, but I'm saying specifically, the Brahminical occupation, what is it?
Teaching, teaching, studying.
Studying, teaching, sacrifice, puja. Right? So in other words, it's all the activities of ashram. It's all the good activities of ashram, the recommended activities. So therefore, specifically their performance of their duties, that's the beauty and the wealth. That's the real wealth, is that they can do that. Right? Others, then they try to do that. Generally, you see the kings do it well, but if they're going to do it, they're going to make it big. Right? They're going to do a sacrifice, you know, there's a big arrangement, everybody comes and who's in awes about the arrangements and all that. You know, but they're very serious about doing it. Vaishyas will do, but sometimes you see is that they also try to make a show. Of course, it's not as big as the Kshatriyas. But when they do it, but they're looking at what benefit they'll get. Right, where Kshatriya, it's the right thing to do. But because of the mode of passion, it always has to be like that. Well, the Brahmin is just, that's what he does, and he does it every day. So he can be doing yajnas every day and that, and no one even notices it. Does that make sense? So that's the real wealth in that, is that they can engage in these three and not be worried about what they're going to gain from it. Right? And we see that in Shastra, that if we're talking about a Brahmin who has a problem, right? Because there'll always be examples of Brahmins who are not doing things properly. Oh. Just now it seemed first effective in going back to Denmark. It's no rock.
Disappearing.
So that was a service, right? Okay. Is that generally it's the point is they're doing their activities nicely, but the purpose of the results, that's where the weakness is. They're proud of their knowledge, they're proud of their facility. You know, they want to enjoy the results, their social prestige. Does that make sense? So it points it out, and so then they lack that beauty and wealth. Right? Because yeah. That makes sense? Because the beauty means that the attitude is right. Does that make sense? Beauty is based on that, the attitude. That makes sense. Like that. That's. Yes?
Is penance more for one's purification and austerity is just the forms of duty? Is there some distinction like that?
I would say is that penance and austerity are the same thing. You're just looking at two different aspects of it. Austerity, you're looking at the aspect of it's my duty, it must be done. Penance, you're looking at the difficulty that comes from doing that. Does that make sense? So it's just looking at a different aspect of it.
The English word penance has a traditional meaning that it's activity undertaken for the purification for something that we've done wrong.
Yeah, but here is, yes, and so what we've done wrong is we came here. Right? You know, we think I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the. Because the whole, like, probably was mentioned, oh, that was in the Bhagavatam. Oh, this is Bhagavatam, the fifth canto. Is that force of material enjoyment? He's saying is that material world, it's meant for punishment. But in between the little gaps of the punishment, in that gap, we call that pleasure. You know, he gives the example of when you take as a punishment, then somebody is put underwater. And then when you pull them out and they get that breath, they find that they're happy. So they may look at those, they'll focus on those moments, on when they can breathe and when they'll be happy. When actually the whole thing's a punishment, they may not catch that aspect. So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, in the cracks, they get a little bit of punishment. Because when you switch from one punishment to a next, there's, you know, that little transition, then there's that moment of happiness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just, from what I can see, is that it's just the it's a different aspect of the same thing. So in other words, you're looking at penance, you're looking more at the aspect of controlling the senses. Well, austerity, you're looking at the engagement in proper, you know, positive engagement. You know, appropriate positive engagement. But to do that means you have to control the senses. You can't do the right thing if you don't control the senses. That's why you see as those people who are successful in the world, because they can control the senses. But it's not that after having controlled the senses and getting the results, that they continue to control the senses. That's what's recommended. But the point is people want to be successful, but they don't control their senses at all. So those who are successful, then half the time, in the process, they control their senses, but once they get the results, they don't. But the devotees, they control their senses all the way through. Does that make sense? So therefore, the devotional is cultivated and they're successful. Right? The devotees may think that, no, there's something else that makes you successful. It's simply control of the senses. Right? That's all. I remember one devotee, he worked very hard, made lots of money, he wanted to come to India and settle down, but then he needed so many things, you know, if he's going to be in India, he can't get in India, so he bought all these things. He came to India, but then when he came to India, he didn't calculate it that all the money that he would have lived off of for a year, he spent on all the gadgets, so he can only stay like a month or two, and then had to go back again. So that's the point. If you don't control the senses, you don't have anything. So that's the point. Success is based on how well you can control the senses and focus. You know, and then, you know, properly apply this, you know, the whole process. But the main key is that control of the senses. Does that make sense? Okay. According to Bhagavad philosophy, every human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business, because penance only can one realize self and self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. This tapa, or penance, has become from the very beginning of the creation, and it was first adopted by the Supreme Spiritual Master, Lord Brahma. By tapasya only can one get the profit of human life, and not by a polished civilization of animal life. So the whole creation is based on tapa. So if you want to get anything from it, you also have to perform tapa. Right? The animal does not know anything except sense gratification and the jurisdiction of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. But the human being is made to undergo tapasya for going back to Godhead, back home. Taking the path of tapa is the second birth of the desiring disciple. And after being initiated by the proper spiritual master in the chain of succession, one should engage himself in the discharge of tapasya, in the execution of devotional service. One should not, however, think himself on the level of Brahma, to be initiated directly by the Lord from inside, because in the present age no one can be accepted to be as pure as Brahma. The post of Brahma is to officiate in the creation of the universe is offered to the most pure living being. And unless one is so qualified, one cannot expect to be treated like Brahmaji directly. But one can have the same facility through unalloyed devotees of the Lord. through scriptural instructions as revealed in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam especially, and also through the bona fide spiritual master available to the sincere soul. The Lord himself appears as the spiritual master to a person who is sincere in heart about serving the Lord. Okay, so also notice here is that there's element of that direct connection with the Lord. There's no such thing. You have to go through the parampara. And that means then the principle of the spiritual master available to the sincere soul. Does that make sense? So that means they have to be available. It means through instructions they're available all. But that's a siksha relationship. The diksha relationship means they have to be actually physically available. That makes sense. Otherwise, Brahmaji may function like that, just be initiated in the heart. That's because the Lord appeared there. So that means the Lord was available. But unless you're... And he doesn't say that Brahmaji or other great sages. He just says Brahmaji. So in the universe, there's one living entity that is afforded to. And even many times, that living entity is not available, so the Lord himself takes the post of Brahma. Does that make sense? So it basically means, you know, Virat, then he does the job.
Is what this is saying, that facility is available for somebody who is
sincere. Yeah, you're not sincere, then it's not available. Right. That's the whole point. So it's just a process. It's just there. That's the way it is. You know, so why would Prabhupada here in the books, you know, say one thing and then so-called using a letter contradict that and take the letter as absolute and the books as relative? When Prabhupada says, no, the books are absolute and the letters, then you have to be able to apply it to the time, place, and circumstance because that's how he was using it. In his purport to verse 8, Srila Prabhupada explains that Brahma's acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. He made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no difference between the Lord and sound vibration coming from him, even though he is not personally present. Right? So here, that's the whole point, is no, we have to have a diksha connection. No, you have to have a siksha connection. When you're dealing with the previous acharyas, the important thing is the siksha connection. There's no difference. And then in the present, those who are giving instruction, those who are getting diksha from, it's on that platform, there's no difference. So that's the interesting thing, is that we're the ones who make the point of that physical, that vapu is the most important. But actually, there's no difference between them. So the Lord and the Lord's instructions, because he didn't see it different, and he followed the instructions as good as the Lord, therefore he got darshan of the Lord. So that's the subtlety. These are the secrets of how the process works. Yes.
There is a doubt, do we actually need diksha to gain shiksha? Or shiksha is always available?
Shiksha is always available.
Anybody.
Anybody, anywhere, at any time, siksha is available. But the problem is why in Kali Yuga Pancharatra is used, even though it's not the Yuga Dharma. Right? The Yuga Dharma is for Dwapara Yuga. But it's used because it addresses the external identification more. So it regulates the life in such a way that one can take advantage of the instructions. So without diksha, then people don't take advantage of instructions. It's just like this. There's a Bhagavatam class every day. Now, if it was a matter of everyone should just study Bhagavatam, and that class wasn't there, how many would? Right? Yeah. You understand? How many would chant their japa if it was just a matter of up to you? You want to chant or not, you know, it means it's, you understand? So Pancharatra regulates it. No, you have to chant this much. You have to do it at this time. You have to do all these things. They regulate your day like that. So that the lifestyle becomes that. So it's the support for the Bhagavad, because we don't take the Bhagavad that seriously. Because if we did, then why isn't, you know, worship in the temple, you know, how many people are involved? How many people care? Right? Devotees go, but how many are involved? How many are involved in we're chanting, but how many are involved in, let's say, you know, Harinam, you know, or book distribution? Right? How many take seriously the association of devotees and try to render service? You know what I'm saying? I remember once, it was quite amusing. They had this special arrangement for prashad. At one point it was, because they used to cook just the, you know, this, they call it Aush rice. It's the red rice. It's big. It grows in the summertime. It's got a lot more energy and everything to it. You know, it's like if you eat that, you got to do some work, right? Or go to sleep, one or the other. So they'd make that rice, and then, you know, how much you wanted to eat, a thin dal, and then a sabji that was, you know, how you say, the spicing was, you could say, full. Right? Now, at that time, you know, basically most of the project was local boys. And there were a few Westerners. I don't know, like 10, 15, like that. They were having problems because they weren't able to adjust with the rice and that, so they made chapatis for them. But they had a different place to eat. And then how they distinguish it is that anybody can eat at either place, but in the place where the chapatis are, they'll only give you a very small handful of white rice, like Govinda Bhog or something. You know, and for most, Govinda Bhog, that it's air. You know, it's like eating fruit or something, you know. So, you know, where's the substance, you know? You know, so then, so you know, you'd have some a few of the Bengali boys that come over and eat one meal, and then you'd never see them again, you know. And then they'd tell their friends, and after a couple of weeks, no one showed up. So then they were there, and I remember this one day is that, because, you know, someone would serve. You know, they would come because they have to take care of themselves. The Bengalis would take care of the serving there, and so the Westerners had to take care of their own serving. So one day, everybody came in and sat down. And then someone just started, the talk came up about serving. And each one said, no, they have some important work that they've got to get back to. They've got to eat right now. They can't serve. And then the fun part was, is they argued like this for 20 minutes. Nobody's serving. No one's eating. For 20 minutes, they argue about how this one should serve and their service was more important than the other one, so they had to go first like that. And then when the management found out about that, then the whole thing was closed and everybody back to the fat rice. You know, so, you know. So you have this idea that, you know, kind of say, how do you get into that?
Diksha and shiksha.
Yeah. Yes, is that you know, so serving the Vaishnavas was not a value. It was just my work, because it's my work, it's important. And my work's more important than your work, of course, right? But this idea of serving Vaishnavas, serving prasad, you know, it's very rare you go anywhere. It means most temples you go to, who serves prasad?
Bhaktas,
and the newer the better, right? Yeah. If they've been around for a little while, they don't serve prasad, you know? They've already figured out if you're not there, you don't have to serve prasad. So you come 5 minutes late, and then, you know, it works out. So that's the whole point, is why is that? It's because it's not appreciated. So what I'm saying is, the five main things of the Bhagavat, we don't take them as actually the prominent. So therefore, that Pancharatrika is there to give that support that you have a regulated lifestyle. That's just how it works. Because Prabhupada did try just predominantly more on the Bhagavat in the 60s. But then when the effect of it didn't work, devotees didn't know the philosophy, they weren't regular, then he introduced it fully. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, and then, you know, so then you have these two, that's strong, but then when the devotees weren't satisfied in just that lifestyle, they needed more beyond that, the whole social scene, then he introduced the Varnashram. It means Varnashram was already there. When you're dealing with Brahmins, you're already dealing with five parts of the Varnashram system. Right? When you add Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, you only add three parts. Five are already there. Does that make sense? Because the whole ashram is brahminical. So Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they follow brahminical ashram. All it is you're adding these three occupations. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it works out. So that's why it's important. It's because otherwise we have a tendency to not regulate ourselves. Upanishadratra is it's designed like that. In other words, it's the Veda, because the lifestyle comes from Veda. Right? And so then those elements from the Veda that are specifically either directly or very supportive of direct worship of Vishnu, that's what's Pancharatra. So Pancharatra is only Vedic injunctions, but it's those specific ones. Dropping anything that would be, you know, you could say more inclined towards, you know, karma or jnana. Those ones are dropped. So that's why we see even now is that all the emphasis is on the Diksha Guru. Siksha Guru, no one cares. Senior Vaishnava is there and gives classes, this, that, you know, who cares? Diksha Guru shows up once a year, then the whole temple jumps up and down. But the whole, that's fine. But why aren't they taking care of these other senior devotees, these preachers? So you can see is that we put the focus on that, but at the same time as we want the independence of the other. You know? So like that. So that's the difficulty. The best way of understanding, okay. There is no difference between the Lord and sound vibration coming from Him, even though He is not personally present. The best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is a living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. So here is the interesting thing is the vibrator. We're thinking I'm doing the chanting. No, we're taking part in the already vibration that's going on. In other words, the name's already there. We get to take part in it. The secret of success is to receive the sound from the right source of a bona fide spiritual master. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency. But therefore, the Purushacharya Vidhi. Right? The holy name doesn't require it. The problem is we require it. Does that make sense? Other systems, if you don't go through Purushacharya Vidhi, you're not qualified to take initiation. Right? But the Bhagavad doesn't require it. But the problem is we may not have qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency. Therefore, the Purushacharya Vidhi brings us to the platform of being able to discern. Then we can take advantage of the Bhagavad. Otherwise, the Bhagavad's there, we're getting benefit. Why are we in contact with Krishna consciousness? Why are we practicing? Person's brand new. How would that happen?
Contact with devotees.
He's just heard the name and all that. So the potency's working. But how much do they discriminate and understand that? So initiation means you can discriminate and appreciate the transcendental nature. Right? Therefore, then one has to be qualified. So the Purushacharya Vidhi, do we all understand Purushacharya Vidhi? Purushacharya Vidhi means preliminary activities to initiation. Like that. It's the performance of sacrifice, serving prasad, you know, like that. So, you know, for devotees it's only seen as Purushacharya Vidhi, not as actual direct bhakti. So then, all these things, menial service, all these activities that one does, that qualifies, it purifies the heart, qualifies that you can discern. So by Krishna's grace, then you learn. But the Bhagavat means just by hearing and that association, you might be able to, by the grace of the devotees and the Lord, discern anyway. Right? So the smarta, if you haven't done all these things, then they'll say you're not qualified. But for the devotees, whether they did those activities or not, if they become qualified, they're qualified. That's the independence of the Bhagavad. Right? Just because one's independent doesn't mean that, you know, these other things aren't useful. Does that make sense? The cook is independent, right? But, you know, pots help. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Somewhere?
Yes.
We have two extremes, basically. One's those say Diksha, and they worship only Diksha Guru, and they into Diksha Guru. And the other one, the Ritviks, they say no need Diksha, no need nothing. And
then why do they have the ceremony? Why do they say Prabhupada's a guru? Why do they have the ceremony?
Just take Shiksha.
No, but then that you were already doing. Why have a ceremony and now accept that Prabhupada is your spiritual master? Why is that there? Why is there that formality?
To make sure you're Ritvik.
Yes. Yeah. You know. Because the thing is what they don't understand is that their process is working because now they've taken initiation from the person who did that yajna for them. The person who did the yajna is their Diksha Guru.
So the Ritvik is the Diksha.
The Ritvik is the Diksha Guru. Prabhupada's going to be a Siksha Guru. There's no question of ever being a Diksha Guru for someone who didn't take initiation while he was present. It's not possible. If you're Brahma, okay. But if you're not Brahma, as pointed out here, if you're not Brahma, you understand? Because otherwise, if you apply that, why Prabhupada? Why not Bhaktivinoda? You know, why not Lord Brahma himself? Hey, you know, come on. Okay, it's already been pointed out, I can't get directly from the Lord. Okay, I'll accept that. But I could get from Brahma, you understand? So the whole thing becomes absurd. They don't understand because they're not educated enough because they're covered by illusion. What is the point? If Prabhupada's the Diksha Guru, who gets the most? If we're talking about an organization, who gets the most benefit?
Prabhupada
disciples, but specifically the temple president. And who are the people that are the most into Ritvik? Temple presidents. Why? Because then you don't have a Diksha Guru who's going to come along, and that you got to slow down the temple activities for a few days, make considerations, adjustments, and you definitely don't lose any money. Right? No one to tell anybody what to do, no one to tell disciples something else to do, no one to say that what you're doing is right or wrong.
So he's the Diksha Guru?
He's the actual Diksha Guru. They don't understand it, but they don't have enough brains to understand it. See, material qualification isn't the brains to understand spiritual. You know what I'm saying? In other words, IIT is not enough for spiritual understanding. You know, being a lawyer is not enough. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is they don't understand what they're dealing with. The systems are already set. This whole thing is, well, you know, Prabhupada wrote, that TKG wrote the letter. And so he used his own wording, and then now that's the absolute, yeah, it's wrong. So here's the point, Prabhupada's pointing it out, it's already there. There's a system. But because they take Diksha as the prominent, there actually is, it's talking Siksha, but it's actually Diksha. Because when you explain the actual point, then at least the present ones will say that this is, close, this is exactly what we're saying. The only thing is where we say Diksha, you say Siksha. But that's only the top guys that have a little more brain. But if you talk to the originators of it, where it was actually more of a philosophy rather than a managerial thing, then they would say, no, we accept this. Right there. But, you know, those guys are long gone. Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's just not enough understanding of philosophy. It's because of the neophyte, that's why the Pancharatrik system is there. And so we can't claim to use the Bhagavat when we're neophytes. Because if you don't appreciate Vaishnavas and they can't be gurus and preachers, then that means you're a neophyte. It's that simple. If you can't accept that someone could become a guru, that means you're a neophyte. It's not rocket science. Yes.
You said that the air process works anyway.
The process, what it means, they're connected and all that, but they're still an illusion because they think it's Prabhupada's or Diksha Guru, and it's not. It's the person who did the, who authorized the initiation ceremony. They're the Diksha Guru. So the point is then, if this one's not qualified, why is this temple president qualified? You know, the traveling preacher who does so much and commits himself to that, why is it he's unqualified, but the local manager is qualified? You know what I'm saying?
My doubt is that, say, they're still in illusions.
Yes, they're in illusions.
That is my doubt.
It should take you out of illusion, but it's a matter of taking advantage of it. Just like this, when you take initiation, the body is changed. So what do we do with the body after initiation? We do anything different? Much of the time we do exactly the same things. We're chanting the holy name. When you chant, you're on the liberated platform, you're transcendental. And then after that, we'll go back to just ordinary activities. Why? Because it's conditioned. So illusion's going to remain. But here in this case, there's not much chance of that illusion going away. Why? Because they don't accept Vaishnavas. They accept Prabhupada, but not Vaishnavas. So that kind of such narrow neophyte is not very useful. It means, in other words, it's like this. You cannot go back to Godhead with this mentality. It's simple. Because this is a philosophical. We're not talking about if you're eating cornflakes or not. We're not talking about really downright completely stupid conversations like that. We're talking about real philosophy. You don't accept Vaishnavas. Why would you accept Vaishnavas in the spiritual world? Only because they're liberated? That's why you accept them? So Rupa Goswami, his specialness is because he's liberated? Rati is special because she's liberated. Right? And everyone here is a schnook because they're not. So, if we're only talking about liberation, then, one, what is the important element to us? Right? Jnana. And then the other, because the soul's already liberated. All living entities are liberated. Just they don't know it. So what's the problem? The illusion. So then we're saying, oh, this one, okay. So it's not really even having a proper understanding. It's not an advanced understanding. The other thing is the liberated, so where do we worry about liberation? In which realms? Here, in the spiritual world, no one talks about liberation. That's not it, because you exist in that state. But they're talking about the existence of Rupa. So then, what does that leave you? So it's not about the personality. So the point is without the personality of Godhead, you don't go back to Godhead. Brahman and Paramatma won't get you back to Godhead. So that's the level of their function. At best. And they don't even know that, so how much benefit they'll get from it. Does that make sense? So the intent is ultimately the most important element. They say they want to please, but Krishna is surrounded by unlimited loving devotees. They don't accept that. Because then only Prabhupada could be like that. So it drops it down into a world religion rather than a, you know, universal religion. That's all. You know, what's the difference between them and everybody else in the world religion scene? You know, we're good, everybody else is a schmo. Yes, of course. It means these things are there. They're insulting all the way around. It's not like that. But we're just taking that one aspect. Yes.
What you said, I was going to say, it looks like Christians only Jesus saved.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yes, it's like that. So these kind of mentalities will keep you here. They're not valuable for going back to Godhead. No matter how much greatness and wonderfulness you do, it still is not a mentality you can apply in the spiritual world. Because you say, no, in the spiritual world I won't have a problem, everyone's liberated. But that's the whole point, is that's all the more value they are, is they're liberated. You don't care for them as a person, unique flavor, so that aspect of personality and individual, you don't care about. So they're actually impersonal. But they don't see it.
I was thinking there's no appreciation for the power of bhakti as compared to
the Yeah, there's no appreciation. The holy name, it means, why are they here? Why are they in the process? So just that they're here, how are they maintained? By their own qualifications, their own intelligence? No, it's by Krishna's mercy. So therefore, why can't everybody else? And if it's a whole thing, but they're into, money and power, and so are they. Why? Otherwise, why would they notice it? You know what I'm saying? It's just like that. You notice what qualities you have. You don't notice other qualities. And the reason it bothers them so much is because that's what they want. If they didn't want control of people and the money, then why would they care? Why would they care if someone else is doing it? You know what I'm saying? So that's what it boils down to. Just like every one, because it's a combination of modes. Just like when Prabhupada's talking about Buddhism, who is it for? What varna?
Kshatriyas.
Jainism, who is it for?
Okay.
You understand? So therefore, it's a religion that's categorically for a particular mentality. Someone who wants, on the local level, to control everything. It's just designed for that.
There are other groups in the same world who just say, unless the person is extremely unalloyed.
Yeah, but what do they mean, extremely unalloyed? Means, what's the difference between unalloyed and extremely unalloyed? I mean, like that. 100% pure or extremely 100% pure. What does that mean? Unless they, but who are they to make these comments? Did I upset you? What does that mean? What's their position? Who are they to judge? Because unless you're on that platform, how can you tell who it is? So you can only tell by some symptoms. Like Prabhupada says, Uttamadakari, one of the symptoms is when somebody sees you, they chant. So now when devotees walk down the street dressed as devotees, what happens? People chant. So what does that mean? So if you're saying, well, they're not a pure devotee, but the effect is there, so what does that mean? They're carrying, because they carry and follow the instructions of the Uttamadakari, they're getting the effect. So what about that? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, even if you bring out the logic and prove that it's there, still they won't accept it. Because it's not a doubt. It's a misgiving. They just don't want that, they and Bhakta Jose joined at the same time, in fact, and they were a little bit more in the leading position. And then, 20, 30 years later, Bhakta Jose is now, this pod or that pod. And so they just can't digest it. That's all. This is what you're really dealing with. You're not dealing with an actual philosophy. Because it boils down to the who controls the money and who controls the devotee, temple devotees. That's it. And so it's just one solution that's found to adjust with that. So you get rid of the guru, and then the temple president's the Siksha guru, and so Hari Kaul. Because that's the whole thing, unless they're this. But they don't even know the terms. They just continue the terms? Okay, extreme, pure, unalloyed devotee. Anything else? They have more terms. Uttamadhikari.
Mahabhagavat.
Sadguru. Other things? They use pure devotee?
Yes.
Yeah, pure devotee. Okay. Anything else? Advanced? Okay. Now, let's look at these terms. Advanced means from nishta on. Pure devotee means from nishta on. Right? Prema Bhakti is that level. What about Ibhava Bhakti? Are they going to accept someone at Ibhava Bhakti? That's an Uttamadikar. Uttamadikar starts at Bhava. You understand? So that's the things. They have all these terms. That's the point, is it's sentiment. It's emotion. It's not real knowledge. But the people who, you know, do all the talking are clever. But their intelligence is stolen by illusion. They're unable to present it nicely. Yes.
I feel that all pleasure and envy.
That's why we're here. So it's just another manifestation.
No, I heard that we, when we say that about their perspective, it's envy to them.
I don't envy anything about them. Why would I want to be in their position? Why would I want to be worried about any senior Vaishnava comes along and it's a threat? Why would I want to be like that? In fact, why would I want to manage a temple? You know what I'm saying? For me,
yes.
Why would I want to manage a temple? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, what's there to envy? I'm already a disciple of Prabhupada. What's the envy about it, you know? And I'm saying, it's just a cute little term to throw out, you know, it's one of those, say it and it solves all problems. It's, you know, it's one of those, you know, panaceic phrases. Oh, we're not the spotty prabhu, you know. Therefore, you know, as a woman, I should give a class. I thought you just said you're not the body. You know what I'm saying? So these are all these clever little phrases that people use, you know, just surrender, Prabhu. You know, yeah, but we are surrendered to Krishna, but what you're suggesting doesn't work. No, just surrender. You understand? These are, and who uses these the most? Temple presidents. Right? Now, they have a big responsibility. They have to get things done. But that's why Prabhupada wanted the devotees to be studied in the philosophy so they could use the philosophy as it is to get things done rather than rely upon emotion and sentiments. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference between a theologian and the local priest. The parish priest may not know much, but he knows sentiment and he can get people inspired. The theologian actually knows the philosophy. Right? So we're a theistic movement. We're supposed to know the philosophy. And by that you can explain why they should be doing
it. I have experience with the local priest.
You know what I'm saying? And that's the final point they'll say is you're envious. Well, where's the logic? Why am I envious? Give us the logical layout. That they can't do. So as soon as they say you're envious, that means they have no more arguments. You've defeated them, but they're not about to acknowledge it because it's a doubt. I mean, it's a misgiving, not a doubt. So it's purely emotional. So it's not about that they were looking for a solution. They're not like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya or Prakashananda Saraswati, where they have doubts, but no misgivings, right? They're looking for the absolute truth. So when it comes along, they take it. This position, they're not looking for the absolute truth. They've found something in between that works for them on their mundane position. We have to remember, philosophical deviation is worse than sensual. And that's the blame that they put on the others. Oh, all these gurus fall down, so we'll just take initiation from Prabhupada. But that's a philosophical deviation. That's a more fallen position than the other one. Right? Because Krishna says in the Gita, someone who's, you know, fallen down, you know, then he understands his position. It's a fallen position. It's not good. He's still saintly. Does Prabhupada say that about the jnanis?
No.
The Mayaya Pratijnanas? No, he doesn't say that at all. Because they're bewildered, because they think, no, we're good. They're philosophically fallen. They're saying, we're good. You know, so I'm saying, you deal with the devotees that have this proclivity, you be pleasant, nice, and engaged in however it works. Just stay away from the discussions. Just stick to, you know, it's just like, you know, so it's like, you know, like the brahmacharis and the ladies, you know, it's down to pass the salt, you know, it's, you know, just something practical. See, stick to that. And then it's fine. You know, they're doing service, we're doing service, the mission goes on, fine. But just stay away from the philosophy, because they don't know the philosophy. You can't make up your own philosophy and then claim Prabhupada made it up. Oh, he's the acharya, he's independent. It says acharya means he doesn't do that. You know? Charandas Babaji, he did that. Right? Radharamandas Babaji, he did that. You know, a whole list of people, they do that. The Sahajiyas, they do that. Acharyas don't do that. Yes, they're independent, but they don't do it. Prabhupada's got all 8 mystic cities, he doesn't use them. You know? Like that, because otherwise you can come up with mundane stuff. Narad Muni, he's the Rajarshi, the Raj of the Rishis. What does Raj mean?
King.
Okay. And Shiva is the best of the devotees. Either one of them wear a crown?
No.
So this whole idea, because you're a Raj, you have to wear a crown. Where does that fit in? That's mundane intelligence. You understand? So all these things, people make these deviations. They're just mundane intelligence. It just sounded good. So yeah, you know, you ever seen Indra without a crown? Yeah, you don't see him without a crown. He has to have a crown. He's Indra. Have you ever seen Narad Muni with a crown? Shiva with a crown? Like that? 4 Kumaras? You know, the people who actually are leaders of the universe that everyone except Brahma respects. Brahma respects them, but I'm saying because of seniority. But everyone in the universe, every king bows down to these ones, and none of them wear crowns. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is you can get into these things and make these things up, and they sound good. And the mind can catch it because it's mundane. But like this point that we're saying here is, you know, the austerity is performing your duty, but then, you know, if we're austere, how do we get anything? But then, no, it's your austerity is to, your grihastha, your austerity is to get stuff. Even if you don't feel like it, you're still supposed to get it. You know what I'm saying? And the actual mandate is get the impossible. Now we're talking, right?
Huh? That's the key point.
Yeah, that's the key point. It must be impossible, not the ordinary. Yeah, you understand? So that's the whole thing, is that it just makes sense. So, but when we discuss these things that have dual meanings, it's transcendental at the same time it can be mundane. What's the difference? It's how you view it. That's the stuff people can't, but you get this stuff that's just directly, this is this, everyone, Hari Bhava. Right? Because it's just mundane. You know, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Just for information's sake. Except for thorns, Jesus never wore a crown either. You know. Yeah, he's King of Kings. Yeah, that was the whole point. Indra means King of the Jews. Like that, in Latin. That's why you got the thorn crown. So. Okay? Enough on these issues. I think we haven't touched on these for a long time. Okay, does that make sense? In other words, that's why the Bhagavatam, that's why we're studying, because the question came up the other day, why so fine the point? Because then we can deal with these things. Because now, having this understanding, you can just see it's obvious that they just don't philosophically work. You know what I'm saying? It's not a matter of emotions or feelings or opinions, it just doesn't work. You know, I want to put in my spark plugs. You know, the guy brings a jackhammer. It's not going to work. No, but that's your opinion. You know, it's like, it's, these are just stupid conversations. So that's the whole thing. They're less intelligent because it's not that they're materially less intelligent, because a lot of them who are involved in it are very intelligent like that, but a lot of them aren't also. So, but the point is it's real spiritual intelligence comes by Krishna's grace. The ability to understand comes by Krishna's grace. It's not because I'm intelligent I understand. It's only when it's revealed. I mean, is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, would we consider him intelligent? Look at his poetry. Look at the way he's qualified. Right? But he couldn't understand how the Kam Gayatri was 23 and a half syllables. It was but he was sincere in trying to understand Radharani revealed. So that's the whole point, it's revelation. So they haven't gotten to revelation yet. You know, we're talking about revelation without Paul here. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency. Yes?
I have a question. What should be our mentality about these things that people are very
old and trying to do? It's just a matter, like I said, if you're some doing service or something, then just stick to discussing the service. You know, the whole point is that, and if they insist on discussing philosophy, tell them it's not happening. You know what I'm saying? That's the most difficulty with those who get into these side things. You know, get into Ritva, get into Gaudiya Mada. They can't keep their mouth shut and just do service. You know? Because the thing is, if all this is not in place, then nothing else works. But they don't know what's the prominent thing. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's where we start. Right? The Prabhupada's given instructions, follow them. That's where we start. So, if they'll just stick to the service, then what do we care? Does that make sense? Yeah. But if they have to discuss, then you just do something else. You know, so, otherwise, we can be pleasant, be nice. No, the point is whatever, we'll just see what happens. It's like this. At the time of the Acharyas, you have all these Upasampradayas. Upasampradayas just come on their own because you're dealing with the material world. You know, if you mix pure devotion too much with other things, and you end up with an Upasampradaya. That's all. Because in other words, it just becomes technically unviable. Because what's happened, the intent has changed. Because otherwise, someone who's brand new to Krishna consciousness, how much pure devotion is there? But the intent is good. Therefore, it moves through. So it's not what they're mixing it with, it's the intent. Why do they insist on that? Why do they insist on that? Because the point is you make such a stink about the gurus, what about the qualifications of a disciple? Sanatana Goswami, the qualifications of a disciple, if one reads it, you know, there would probably be very few in the movement that could feel comfortable that I have this qualification. And this is after 40, 50 years. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, you know, you make the best with what you have. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Down at the... we have the local neighborhood. Okay? And, you know, you have the special kind of spray can pointy artwork all over the walls, right? And they all have on their, you know, black jeans with their chains and their, you know, sleeveless and their, you know the same. So now, let us say you have someone sets up a center there to try to help get people not so much dependent on drugs and being abusive and all that, right? Now, a lot of times, who's the one who does the best at helping these people?
Someone
who is from that background, that he himself was, you know, could see the benefits of leading a improved lifestyle. So then what's the problem? So if I point out, well, the guy was, you know, he was a drug dealer 10 years ago, or he did this, or he did that. What's the use? The guy's doing good work. So what's the use of pointing out that this one did this and that one did that? Who cares? Is the effect there? Are people inspired? Are they developing in their Krishna consciousness? Are things spreading? Yes, they are. So then what's the problem? So that means, you know, it's all about the past or what could happen in the future. So that's passion and ignorance. How is that a philosophy? So that's the whole point. That's how it comes up. But the point is that if you have to work with somebody, as long as they keep their mouth shut and do their service and all that, then what's the problem? But if they have to talk this and that, then they can go talk somewhere else. You know, or if it's their place, you go somewhere. You know, doesn't matter. Point is if you want pure devotion, you have to be with those who that's their real interest. Not these other issues. You know, I'm saying Krishna consciousness can't be issue-based. Whether it's, you know, Vedic issues, or whether it's modern issues. Issues are not a basis of Krishna consciousness. It's not that only when we work out these issues, then we can go forward, then the movement can be pure. That's what Prabhupada told Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Only when India is free from the British rule and they can follow their own culture, then we can establish Krishna consciousness. And he said, no, Krishna consciousness is independent. So that's the whole thing. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency, either by discriminating or by fortunate chance, if one is able to receive the transcendental sound from the bona fide spiritual master. His path of liberation is guaranteed. So even if you can't discriminate, if it's fortunate chance that you hear from the bona fide line, then it works. But it's not that you shouldn't try to become qualified. The disciple, however, must be ready to execute the order of the bona fide spiritual master as Lord Brahma executed the instruction of his spiritual master. The Lord himself, following the order of the bona fide spiritual master, is the only duty of the disciple. And this completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. The Lord's order descends in disciplic succession through the bona fide spiritual master. And thus, execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is factual control of the senses. So that's the whole point. Penance means control of the senses. Right? So that's the thing. Penance would be on that side. You're controlling your senses. Austerity would mean you're engaging and applying it as doing your duty. Like that. You know, but they go together.
Like duty and the scripture being positive?
Yeah, you could say. And also he says here, Lord's order descends through the bona fide. Descends. So it's not that it descends and stops. It keeps descending. Because otherwise, if it stops there, if only Prabhupada is doing, then Harinam, what should Harinam be? You just need someone going out with a thing to the recording of Prabhupada, and, you know, that would be the Harinam. Right? no class should be given by anybody because it doesn't have the potency. You know, in fact, we're chanting the holy name. Why would it work for us? Because only Prabhupada can chant. So if I can chant, having heard the holy name, and get spiritual benefit, that means then the potency is there. And then one goes and tells that to someone else, and they get interested in Krishna consciousness. So the potency is there. So why is it that anybody can make someone a devotee, but at the same time, no one's qualified to be a guru? And what does guru mean? Guru means you speak about Krishna. Understand? So that's why I say it's misgiving. It's not a doubt. It's not anything. It's they actually have a problem.
They come across as Catholic, Christian, sentimental, and
kind of like that. But it has a bit of it. Does it? It won't be these. You know, it'll have an arrogance of authority to it along with it. So you'd have to do this. If you took Catholicism and born again and mixed that, that would make it more.
The exclusivity.
Yeah, exclusivity is there, and at the same time, it's just pure sentiment. It's a nice thing, but. Okay, so penance is factual control of the senses by executing the order of the spiritual master. Otherwise, Hiranyakashipu, he's doing penance. He's following the direction of Shastra. But it's not that that's what he's been specifically told to do. So he's doing that because that's desire. That's, remember, it means that its purpose is kama. Like that. I think so. No, it's not, but there's a name for it. It specifically means, see, there's yagyas you're supposed to do. There's yagyas you can do. You know, for your, and then there's yagyas you do just because you want something. They're names, they're specific names. So he's doing it because it's something he specifically wants. He's not doing it because he should do. As a Brahmin, you know, he should do, or as a Kshatriya should do. He's doing it because he wants a particular power. The personality of Godhead, quote, the personality of Godhead satisfied by Brahma's penances. Right? In other words, he took the order of Krishna and followed it, because Krishna is his spiritual master. Right? So that's the thing. He fully committed himself to following Krishna's instruction. So therefore, his penance pleased Krishna. The personality of Godhead satisfied Brahma's penance, revealed Vaikuntha to him. Vaikuntha is the Lord's personal abode. Footnote 29. Srila Jiva Goswami determines from verse 15 that this Vaikuntha is Dwarka, Lord Krishna's own Aishwarya Dhamma. On some occasions he enjoys Dwarka in his two-handed form, while on other occasions, when performing his kingly duties, Lord Krishna displays Chaturbhuja. So you can do it, just depends on the flavor. So it's just... I mean, people have enough trouble with to do with two hands. You really have to be qualified to use four hands, right? If you're just sitting there, what do you do with four hands? You know, put them all across your chest, you know, two levels, and you know, crossed hands. Oh, one in the back, one in the front. Yeah, that's good. You balance symmetrically. Okay. Yeah.
Why the Lord revealed Vaikuntha to Brahma after his penance to be the model for creation?
No, because in this case it seems that the element is Krishna, but at the same time as there's, I guess, this element of officialness that's there. You know, because he is an incarnation of the mode of passion. So he has some idea of Braj, because we're dealing with the same person. It's just the flavors there. Because technically, Braj means prema. You don't have Braj, you really don't see. You don't really have prema, you don't really see Braj. Right? Just like, do the yajnik Brahmins who are living there, do they see Braj? No.
But what do they see the Brahmins then?
They'll technically see Vaikuntha. Right? It's the spiritual world that worship the Supreme Lord. So it's not that they're not worshiping Vishnu. Or even if the point is that it's they don't see that original personality of Godhead. They'll see Vishnu, because here's the personality of Godhead came, but they don't know who he is. They expect, if he had showed up with four arms and all opulences and said, give me your sacrifice, they would have all brought the stuff out. You know, it's the same with Brahma. If Krishna had been sitting there very formally dealing with the coward boys, then he would have thought, okay, maybe this is Krishna. But he's sitting there, he's got something to eat in his left hand, and stuff like that. So then, or eating off each other's plates. So his idea, God doesn't do that. So that's why it said Dwarka. Because that's how he sees. He does formal. But because it's the same person, therefore, there's the activities of what he does in Braj. Right? But it's the same place. It's just that we see, in other words, we approach Brahma Samhita from the light coming from Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami and like that. That makes sense? So that we have that understanding. So we're able to appreciate Braj through what he's teaching. That's why it's not a problem. He's at the head of the Sampradaya, and he can get to Vrindavan. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of things that are happening in the spiritual point. What I could say is, no, unless they're pure unalloyed, this and that. How did Dhruva Maharaj see the Lord? How did he start on the path? Yes, but who gave him instructions? Who was the Siksha Guru?
His stepmother.
He met Narad Muni, but why would he meet Narad Muni unless he was sincere to actually see the Lord? So that means she was a bona fide spiritual master. She put him in contact with Narad Muni. And Narad Muni then put him in contact with Krishna. So we have our spiritual master. As long as he can put us in contact with Prabhupada, then we're going to see Krishna. That's all that's being asked. I'm not saying that your spiritual master is going to put you in contact with Krishna, or your spiritual master is going to put you in contact with Prabhupada. And he, through the parampara, puts you in contact with Rupa Goswami. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that the system is so much more independent, because we're saying, no, unless they're, what was it? How you say, extremely pure, unalloyed devotee, like that. Then, so Prabhupada's uniqueness and specialness is there, but it's not that others can't be involved in the process. Yes?
I think there is a nice example in CC when Mahaprabhu travels and he gives love of Godhead to all those people who see them. And then they give love of Godhead because other people hear and see them, and then it goes like this, yes. Many, many, many times, and everybody gets love of Godhead because one person saw Mahaprabhu on his tour, and then it goes.
And then it goes, and you have these villages and villages. Yeah.
So it works.
Yeah, it works. There's a lot more effect from Lord Chaitanya than we know about. Yeah, it works. Vaikuntha is free from the modes of material nature, time, illusion, and the external energy. But, so in other words, what he means by Dwarka is that he's seeing Goloka, but from that point of formality. Does that make sense? So it's not that there's a problem. Just like Radha Madhava. Why are we at Mangalarti? You want to. Okay. Why are you at Mangalarti? No comment.
I'm not going.
Okay, no, but I say, but most go to Mangalarti. You ask, why do you go to Mangalarti? What's the reason?
Because they have to.
You're supposed to. That's the recommendation.
You understand?
That's different.
So, yes. So, we're Radha Madhava standing on the altar, but they relate to us as Lakshmi Narayana. Why? Because we relate to them now. You understand? The high court judge is with his family. He's out, you know, walking in the park. And then, you know, one of the barristers at the court sees him. You know, he walks over and, you know, starts talking to him. How does he relate to him? As a high court judge or as, you know, the man out with his wife and kids? Yeah, he relates to him as the judge. You understand? It's not, he's dressed, he's there. It's obvious he's out, he's a family man out with his family. So we agree like that. So therefore, because he's dealing formally, therefore that's how he is seen. That's the response. But it's not that you're not dealing with the same person, that if you deal in love, pure love, that you don't see it that way. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is all these things are, it depends how you deal with it.
Let's say now we deal it more in on reverence.
Right.
So, was the time? It might change.
Yes, and when it changes, Krishna knows how we reciprocate changes.
But it changes on its own accord?
On its own, meaning?
Like automatically we practice, and then it comes. Like
yes, but what caused? But what causes it to come?
Mercy.
Devotional service, mercy. In other words, it's not because I did the activity that's the automatic. The automatic is Krishna being pleased that happens. We're taking it. No, we work. So it's not automatic. You have to work. It is automatic because if you're working, it's still Krishna. It's not that because I did it, I get the result. Because I read, you know, the Panchadhyaya in the Bhagavatam, therefore I'm going to develop Gopi, the mood of the Gopis. It's Krishna's mercy. It's not karma. So therefore, it will come. But here is this. This is in the very beginning, right? You know, so give him some time. Right? You know, here would be the symptom. What would be your opinion in this case? Applying it to Haridas Thakur. Have things been worked out?
Yeah.
You say the mercy is there. Right? Don't worry. But, you know, when he's sitting in Satya Loka and Indra and all them come up and they got a complaint, how is he going to deal with them? Yeah, is Haridas or is Chaturmukha Brahma? Yeah. Okay. But if you had, you know, one of the great devotees went and met Brahma, then they would discuss on that platform. Like we mentioned, Krishna and Vaikuntha, he was dealing with Gopal Kumar as Krishna and Braj. But only when it's private, when no one else is there, then he would do that. If others are there, he would deal as Vaikuntha. So you have that aspect also. Sorry? Yes.
Will this progression to occur, is it essential that one has the goal that Krishna brings?
Yeah, you always have goals. No. The point is he has an understanding that he's a maidservant of Krishna, but it doesn't mean that he's functioning necessarily on that platform of spontaneous devotional service where that necessarily the results of that will be gained. But it mentioned he saw that. But we're talking about 151 trillion years ago. Some time is there. Or if you want to say, no, but for Brahma it's not. Okay, it's 51 years. Give him a break. He's learned something in 50 years. Right? Vaikuntha is free from the modes of material nature, time, illusion, external energy. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. 9 and 10. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, at this point, someone may object. Right? So here's what's the point? Penance is the thing. And so therefore, from that, you get the Lord's mercy. And, you know, this is how it's revealed. Okay? So I've made my statement, and I've given an explanation. Right? Now, at this point, the doubt comes up. Right? Because I've already done my two part, by the first and second part of logic. Now I'm moving to the third. I'm now going to expand on it and explain. Right? Just as Brahma told Narada, now you've heard the essence, now you expand that in your explanations to individuals so that they can appreciate it. So now in doing that, I may just start off and expand on it, or I may bring up the doubt. But it's the same thing. Now whether I just explain and therefore remove all doubts, because I know what the doubts are, but I don't necessarily mention them, but I deal with everything, I clear everything, I might bring up the doubt, or I might have the doubtful person there. You understand? The process remains the same. So where does it come up? So in other words, I'm on the third part, because I'm going to deal with doubts. But they, for them, that's the first part. That's their doubt, and then they explain it. You understand? So everything's shifted. Like that. But they, you know, they never get the conclusion, because we already worked that out here. Right, when they get to the third point, we already solved the problem and synthesized what they're saying into what we're saying. Okay. So they're working on the principle of Panchanga and Nyaya, but then at their third stage, it moves into our fourth, and then you give the fifth as the conclusion, and then that way then all five parts are there. That'll be the difference. So here's it. So this is the doubt. Is it not so that because in Vaikuntha there is no influence of the three modes of material nature, which are the origin of varieties, it may be logically concluded that there is no variety in Vaikuntha Loka, right? Because variety is coming here because of the modes of nature. So if there's no modes, there's no variety. Right? That's their argument. So Vaikuntha then would not mean, you know, so they don't have a problem with calling Brahman Vaikuntha, because it's the place of. So in other words, when they say one will go to Vaikuntha, they just take it as Brahman. Or if you say one will go to, you know, the place that's deathless, Samara, which is the name for the heavenly planets, they mean Brahman. Right? So it's not a, that's the thing, is that if one has more knowledge, the use of the terminologies is interchangeable. It's not a difficulty. It's just the intent on doing that, that's the problem.
And
okay.
Who are those that raise the doubt? Who are they?
They would be, in this case, you know, your jnanis, you know, who's interested in liberation. Because they're saying, why would you say there's spiritual variety? Because variety comes from the modes. They don't understand the modes are a transformation of the internal potency. Because they don't know about the internal potency and the transformation into the external. They don't know that at that point, how Rama Devi becomes, Durga. Yes.
So they don't understand Saguna Brahman, Nirguna Brahman.
No, they don't. They don't.
They just have Brahman, that's it.
It's
Nirguna.
It's just Nirguna. Because that's their idea of Brahman, because if you have qualities, then that means it's, you know, it would have form and shape and all this kind of thing. But if it says that there's no qualities, even if we say this nirguna, it means there's no external manifestation of it, because it's just the quality of goodness, the quality of piety, or the quality of friendliness, or whatever is the quality you want to take, that it's generic. So all the unlimited possibilities are there in Brahman. So because, let's say a plant, what is it made out of? A plant means the plant grows from the earth.
Yeah.
What's it made out of?
Earth.
But in the form of all those different, you know, vitamins and minerals and water and whatever was in the earth. Right? So it takes a particular combination, but it got it all from the earth. So in the same way as this creation, all the variety and that, it's gotten it from Brahman. is Brahman has the qualities, and therefore has all the unlimited elements of how those qualities could be manifest, but it's not manifest because it's generic. Right? Therefore, then, external energy can manifest those forms from it. That's why it's also Brahman. Right. You know, just the plant is earth. Yeah, like that. So, considering that someone might raise this objection, Sukadeva Goswami, in the next verses, describes the varieties present in the Lord's transcendental potency, known as Shuddha Sattva, which prevails in the Vaikuntha planets. This description begins with the word Hare in verse 9-10. 2-9-10, quoted in text 2, footnote 30. The Lord is Shuddha Sattva, and by Shuddha Sattva he is revealed. Sattva Guna permits an understanding of Krishna. It does not permit direct experience of Krishna. It's like sunlight before the sun is arisen. So one can get an understanding. So that means the person in there can get an understanding, then if he actually has the desire to know that person, then Krishna will reveal himself. So that's why we recommend the mode of goodness and try to avoid passion and ignorance. So therefore, the sattvic lifestyle given. So it's not that it's the lifestyle's Indian, it's sattvic. It's not that it's Vedic, it's sattvic. Right? And the Lord being Shuddha Sattva, therefore what comes from is Shuddha Sattva, therefore the Veda is Shuddha Sattva. That's its intent. But because since the point is follow the Lord's directions. In other words, what is the Lord's will? That's what we should follow. Therefore, we follow the Veda. We follow his instruction. So then, therefore, most people won't do that. Right? So why will they do something?
For result.
For result. So now if I point out results in passion and ignorance, or even in goodness, but show the result side of it more, you know, what's the external form of the result, then will I be interested? Then I can get interested. Right? So then you give the same principle, just like, let's say, the Kali Bhakta. Does he have a guru?
Yeah.
Does he respect a guru? Does he have shastra? Does he respect a shastra? Is he initiated? Does he have a sadhana? Right? So everything is all in place. Just what is the reason he's doing it for is wrong. You understand? So now, for such a person, if he comes across, you know, somehow or another, you know, through the mode of goodness, he is able to appreciate what the devotee says. And therefore, understands that Krishna is the one to surrender to. Right? Now, will he have a difficulty surrendering to a bona fide spiritual master now? What about following sadhana? You know, reading shastra, chanting japa, being austere. You understand? That's the point of it. That's why it's there. It's only there because then coming in contact with Vaishnavas, then the process, you already have the culture. You only have to switch the deity and the intent. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Then regarding this intent and fruit, we have Gita Mahatmya, we have books on Ekadashi, and it only talks about the benefits we can get. So it's not devotional service then. It's
yes,
really
but the point is the first step is follow Ekadashi. You have devotees that, oh, it's too much trouble, you know, we're traveling and can't find anything to eat, so we just eat grains. You know, because in the Mahatmya and all that, it'll point out the benefits. Does it also mention what happens if you don't follow it? Yes, so that's the whole point. So from both sides, I'm it's like this. Krishna consciousness, it's not about if you don't do it, you go to hell. You know, or let's say you don't have to say you go to hell, you remain in hell. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that the point of the relationship of the whole thing, that the dynamic positive, but one won't do it for that, then there's the mundane benefit. Just like it was, I have to admit, it was a mistake. I should not have recommended it. That when they were going through all the reasons of taking the morning bath, you ever seen a Panchatantra Pandita? It gives all the different things, some, you know, the health and the skin and this and that, and proves intelligence and that. One was there is that it makes you attracted to the opposite sex. So, you know, back in this is late 80s or 90s, so I just said, well, you know, devotees won't worry about that one. We don't need to include that. So it was dropped. Now I wish we had. There would probably be a lot of second generation taking cold baths. Yeah, it might help marriages, right? You know, you notice that the spouse is not quite as interested, you know, start taking the cold bath, you know, and up your game, you know. Yeah. Yes.
All right, so this principle of Shuddha Sattva, can we split it and say that the Sattva is the culture or the practice? And then Shuddha is being mentality behind this practice.
Yeah, you could. That would be an application. It's also, you could say it's a state of existence, because in all these, it's going to be a state of existence. It's going to be an application. It's going to be a result, because you're always going to have the sambandha, you know, the existence, activity, you know, knowledge and activity and results. So you would have that aspect that it's going to be. It's going to be a situation in which you're on that pure platform, but at the same time, it's going to be the activity, and it's going to be how is it Shuddha Sattva if the result's for you? So it has to be that whole intent of the result is also. But you do have this element that when we talk about, let's say, the living entities in Mahat, so technically they're in Vasudeva Sattva, right? So be Shuddha Sattva. But they're in that position not because their intent, but because their situation is Vishuddha Sattva. Because we see as they remain in that until Brahma does the secondary creation. Then they all again take all the positions in the universe. So that means as they were situated there, but they didn't have the intent. Okay. Does that make sense? So the difference is our situation, but the point is we want to be situated in Vishuddha Sattva. The difference is, devotionally, we're going to do something with it to please Krishna. While they're only going to be situated there because it's pleasant, it's nice.
There's no activity.
There's no activity, no. They're just existing there. But they're existing in what is it called? The Karana Shuddha. Right? I'm the controller and enjoyer. And then as soon as everything else is there, then, you know, everything else comes back.
Then it manifests.
Because from that Karana Sharir, because they've been here, there is a Linga Sharir. And so that Linga Sharir then manifests the Stula Sharir. And then there's there. So their position is Vishuddha Sattva. They're still in the Karana Sharir. While our situation, Vishuddha Sattva, there is no Karana Sharir. Does that make sense? So that's what one's trying to get that work on. So that's the most. Okay. Yes?
I've been listening to your lectures for some weeks, and what comes again and again is this way of intent. It's very important.
Yes.
This is like, why that is. It seems like that is.
Why the intent is important. Okay, let us say the child is happy, right, has their crayons, has a piece of paper, and wants to do some, you know, and then draws, you know, the regular, you know, the brown stuff is the dirt, and then you have the house, and then the chimney at 45 degree angles, right, you know, with the smoke coming out. And generally then you have the mountain, and there's a good chance that house might be at a 45 degree angle on the mountain. And then you're going to have the sun there, right, with the, you know, a few rays and a smile, right? And then a bird, right? Always have to have a bird, right? And then a tree, a couple of trees that are sticking out at 45 degrees. Yeah, big flowers and some water, you know, something like that, okay? Then the child gives that to the mother. Okay, so it was the skill what's important? Is that why it's on the refrigerator? Or is it was the intent? You understand? Like that. So that's the whole... It's like this. Let's say that same mom, you know, she's got that on the refrigerator, but out in the living room she does have a Van Gogh or, you know, something else. Okay? Now, what's the point of the Van Gogh? When does that? When is that appreciated?
When the guests come.
When the guests come. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's that is social prestige. But the one on the refrigerator, then that's personal. That's a relationship. The other one is like, who would want to hang out with a guy that cut off his ear? You know what I'm saying? There's other ways to show. Girls like flowers. Have you ever heard of girls like ears? You know, it didn't work. It didn't get, you know, was it, you know, that one guy tried to shoot the president because he wanted to impress the girl. Like that. I forget who it was. They tried to shoot Reagan or somebody. And they found, you know, why? Because he wanted to get this girl's attention. She didn't know he existed. She just went. So it means, you know what I'm saying? There are more standard ways. So the thing is, you know, is he a great guy? You know, it's like that. Who knows if he even took a bath? You know, it's like. So it's a social prestige. The other one is personal. Does that make sense? That wasn't insulting, was it? Okay, just to make sure. Did you take a bath? Who knows? Is that? Yeah. The intent is there, just like, let's say someone's trying to say something and they don't use the wrong words. So you should try to figure out what it is they're trying to say rather than the words. You start with the words, but the intent is what's more important. Because if it's words, you fight over the words. You can do that forever. But if you're trying to figure out what the intent is, then very quickly you'll get to what it is, and then you can actually deal with it. Because if let's say I use the word one way and they use it another, the same word, and so I'm arguing on my point about it, and they're arguing, how am I going to convince them? I can only convince once we understand what's the meaning, how they use the word or how I use the word. Then you can get somewhere. So therefore, that's why it's most important. It means a lot of disagreements between devotees would go away if they worked on the principle of intent. You know what I'm saying? So the intention may be good, but then there are recommended methods. That's why Vaishnava etiquette is there. That's why the 64 items of devotional service is there. That's why duties are there, right? The husband is supposed to please the wife, you know, according to her needs and this and that. It doesn't mention cutting off ears. Does that make sense? So it's not a way, unless, you know, she's some, you know, has some strange kind of mentality. But I even haven't heard of that, you know. I haven't heard about, you know, girls, goth girls, you know, with a dried ear hanging around the neck, you know. I haven't heard about it. You know, so it's not something to do. Does that make sense? So therefore, even though the intent is there, you try to bring the intent in line with what's recommended. And what's recommended, because it's used by acharyas, it's from Shastra, used by acharyas, therefore we're sure that it's going to be goodness to give us an effect of that. If we make up our own process, our own religion, then we can't guarantee that that's going to be it, because... If you have goodness, passion, and ignorance, and you remove goodness, that kind of limits your options to passion and ignorance. Does that make sense? So the intent is good. In other words, you go back to the intent, see their intent, agree with the intent because it's there, but then show them how that's not how they're trying to get their intent isn't the way to get it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Prabhupada ki, samaveta bhaktavrinda ki, trying to die, go and thing. Got to do one page.
One page up in the
afternoon. Can I please ask you something?
This fan seems to work.
Yeah, the fan is so good.
Yeah. It should be one more down there.
Yeah.
Is it necessary for one to have a fiction to go back to Godhead? Or is it?
It's recommended. Because why wouldn't you have?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, what's the problem in having?
That's also true.
In other words, you can advance in the process because you do have one, you know, siksha in the way of Prabhupada and the same Vaishnavas. But the diksha means is that you're committed to the process of following the Vajrayana under the direction of the spiritual master.
Right. So just following.
So that's the form that shows it, like we're saying, boy has affection for the girl. So that's there. But it's expressed by getting flowers.
Okay.
You understand?
Got it.
My friend, she came up to me. She said her wife married for a charity.
It's there in the Madhya Lila. I'm not sure the chapter. It's verse 108 in the Madhya Lila. 108 in the Madhya Lila. I'm not sure the chapter. It's the chapter where Lord Chaitanya is speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati, and he starts explaining about chanting the holy name. It's in there. But see, the point is, it says that the holy name doesn't require it. But the point is, without it, we don't become qualified. That's why we use the mantra, because it makes us qualified to appreciate the Bhagavad Gita. It mentions the difficulties. Basically, what it means is like doing service, like before, Purushchaya Bhadi, washing pots, or, serving prashad, cleaning the temple, doing all those things like that. In other words, it's not just you just want to get initiated, but you should purify yourself by doing these practical, menial service, Dham Seva, Seva the Vaishnavas, whatever you can do. Okay?
I have a conversation with another my friend, and she's an old Mataji, she's a senior, and she said she started telling me about that she heard someone in the 80s from Maharaj, that she doesn't remember who exactly, but she heard this thing that in the spiritual world, Krishna, he wants to take baths, and the one coward boy, he turns into the river, he takes bath, and then he wants to have gamcha for Rakhi, and then another coward boy turns into the gamcha.
I've heard of Kalindi turning into the Jamuna,
yeah.
Or Jamuna turning into Kalindi, and I've heard of Sridham turning into Garuda, like that, because this means, in other words, those expansions of them might be there. So although all those cowherd boys, that's where Indra and everybody else comes to be, but they're all the ones that hang out, Krishna. So there are further expansions that you get, but on that level you don't get. So I haven't heard of that. No. No, there's no need, because the point is Gamsha is also going to be conscious, so why can't Gamsha be Gamsha? Krishna has a dhoti, it's not that it's a cowherd boy. You know what I'm saying? They got the Jamuna there. Why does someone have to turn into a river? They got the Jamuna. And he's going out. It's not that he's not, Mother Jashoda is not packing stuff for him. So I don't think there's a problem.